and welcome to Access All Areas with Dermot and Felicity. I'm My Way Access, Dermot Devlin, and with me always is the chronically fabulous Felicity McKee.
This week we're going to be exploring Halloween and Halloween costumes, but before that we're also going to be talking about inter-abled relationships. And inter-abled is a term that has been used by some disabled couples, so a person who is disabled who's in a relationship with a non-disabled person, but there has been a recent controversy over the use of this term, and so that is going to be our first discussion of the day.
We will see you shortly after this little break. Earlier this week, BBC journalist and wheelchair user Alex Taylor put out a little tweet asking for to speak to inter-able couples in a relationship about what drew them together, the relationship style challenges they faced, what social stigma they had, and how society reacts to them, both in a positive and negative way. And I thought this would possibly be a very interesting topic for the BBC, BBC Three. But unfortunately, Felicity, if she had witnessed herself, that it did seem to provoke a negative and quite an angry reaction from many disabled people upon Twitter.
Yeah, I did notice this. And inter-abled it's an interesting term. It's a relatively recent term. It is used by some couples who, one of whom would be disabled and someone else would be non-disabled. So it's a term that rose to prominence following a very particular Dr. Phil episode in which quite a famous hashtag came out, which was 100 out of 100. So the episode itself was titled I Swiped Right on My Quadriplegic Boyfriend. And in it, there was a couple who described their history of how they got together and also the relationship issues they were having. So Billy was a person who was paralyzed and was being looked after by his girlfriend, Harley, who was now a full-time caregiver. And so it dealt with things such as Billy saying that he felt like a burden, especially to his girlfriend. And Harley also was expressing her frustrations at having to care for him and saying that she was constantly exhausted. And the problem here is that Dr. Phil responded by saying, you can be his lover or you can be his caregiver, but you can't be both. It won't work. 100 out of 100 times, this won't work, which isn't true. And I think really what the issues in their relationship, there could have been wider relationship issues. Granted, we're only seeing a snippet from a TV show, but I think Harley probably needed more support in regards to caring for Bailey, and Bailey I think needed more support in maybe not feeling like a burden, because Bailey wasn't a burden. And the program presented the relationship as very problematic and very negative, and also did kind of present Bailey as a burden, which, you know, you and I as disabled people, we like, that's something that sometimes, like, in the back of my mind occasionally my little inner critic comes out. And because of societal expectations and, you know, because I think we all have some inherent, sometimes internalized ableism that we have to try and break through, I can sometimes feel like a burden, but I know that I am not. And the problem is this program was presenting that in this way. So when the
regarding the kid, Dr. Phillip has said, you know, he might classify himself as Dr. Phillip McGraw, however, you know, his doctorate was in psychology, so it wasn't like he wasn't a physician or that. However, he had to, and I'm using air quotes here, had to voluntarily give up his doctorate in the year 2006. And it's primarily to do with a lot of backlash from psychologists themselves who had witnessed some of the terms and how he would sort of treat the guests when he spoke, such as the guests that we were talking about today. You know, that his psychology was all wrong, and he was actually hurting the guests come on the show, but not only like hurting the guests come on the show, but actually hurting the psychology field itself, because he was getting it all wrong. So it's not a bit surprising that that Dr. Phillip, and I say we'll just call him Phillip from now on, but that Phillip had got this badly wrong. And I can totally understand that on this incident within that program, that there was an absolute angry backlash against them.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, as a term, interabled is something that kind of rose to prominence following this program, especially with the hashtag. So a lot of the times when we're seeing the term used, it has got connotations linking back to this negative. It's not the fault of the couple on the program, it's the fault of the program and it's the fault of Dr. Phil. But the thing is, there are very positive depictions of couples using the term. And there was a recent marriage, and the marriage was between Sharon Burka and Hannah Alward. I am so sorry if I'm saying that wrong.
Well,
and
the only thing I see with them is just like anybody who is disabled, like they are quite famous in the disabled world, like, because they do send out a very positive and strong image when it comes to disability and disabled people. So, and I would be, I see they'd be quite well known regard in the non-disabled world as well. So they are like, they would be strong figureheads. So,
yeah. They're known as Squirmy and Grubs online. And I believe that the tweet in question that got a lot of commentary, I wouldn't necessarily say backlash. I think it was more of a discussion, but it could maybe seem a bit much all at once, because I think the thing is, this was a disabled person who was using a term that another disabled person was using. And like, you and I have had discussions as to whether or not it's identity or person first. So I personally use disabled person. You had previously been using person with disability and you're now using disabled person. But I wouldn't necessarily tell another disabled person that they cannot use the term. And in regards to interabled, when they did do the 100 out of 100, it was a term I used at that point, because it did, I think it can lead to conversations. So my relationship with my partner, we do experience things that an average couple, that both people in it would be non-disabled, maybe do not face. And so it can be a good word for starting a conversation around that. But at the same time, it could be argued that as a word, it also then is further segregating or further isolating or perpetuating difference of a couple. So why is this couple different from another couple? Is it just because one person in it happens to have a disability? But again, it's a difficult topic, because it is disabled people who are using the term. Not every disabled person likes the term. And I think it's important to have a discussion around that, but to also acknowledge that sometimes people are using terms that we may not agree with. Maybe someone has some internalized ableism and hasn't come to a part of their journey where they're aware that certain language maybe isn't suitable. And I did feel quite for the journalist involved in this, because they were pitching a story to have disabled representation on the BBC, which is so important. And at the same time, the use of the word was kind of what got all the attention.
Yeah, it became the hook that everybody grabbed onto. And I could see maybe why some of the points were, they might be fearful after what Dr. Phil had done in America. But as Alec Taylor had pointed out, like, this was a program that he put by the BBC. This is a program that he would be editing himself and producing. So it would have been a disabled program made by a disabled person. So it wouldn't be sort of a non-disabled person adding their narrative or adding their story to it. So it would be something that would be coming from one of a better expression, coming from us and ourselves. So
yeah.
With that, I would have no issue. It's whenever you add like a narrative that suits, like the non-disabled narrative, that's where I might have an issue for it. Like it's something I'll discuss next week. Like, I'm going to be appearing on BBC 4 now in a few weeks' time. And one of the reasons I felt comfortable about doing it was because it was disabled-led rather than being non-disabled-led about disability. But that's something we can talk about maybe next week. But with regard to Alex, he came from the right place. And I do think that his program would have been done right, because it would have been led by him. And it would have opened the eye to many people to actually say, this is actually what an inter-able relationship is. It's not that the disabled person is reliant on the non-disabled person to live and function in their life. They both depend on each other, as any relationship does.
Yeah, any relationship is give and take. And I think the key issue here is the word interabled, and I think it's some of the associations that the word has. But I do kind of take my lead from the fact that I have seen disabled couples use the word and feel that the word accurately reflects their lived experience of the world. And I'm not sure I'd be comfortable with saying that they cannot use that word to describe this, because I understand the arguments both for and against. It's not a word that I have come down on either side of personally. It's one that I have used once before when the 100 out of 100 hashtag was going, because for me it was important to show that while I'm in a relationship with caring issues, we function and have a great relationship.
I've been single myself, so I really don't have a whole lot of input regarding that. But as for the actual term and the able relationship, but I'm sort of on the indifferent side, pretty much the same as yourself. It's not a word that I would use. It's not a word I wouldn't use. It just is a word that some disabled people use, and I don't have the right to tell them that they are wrong or they can't use that. However, for me, it's a word that really is defunct. It doesn't need to be said unless you're talking about a story, like this couple that got married. They're talking about their relationship, and ask Graham, but to say that every relationship to people disabled is interabled relationship, well, I don't see the need for that. But that's not what that couple was doing. It was telling their story, and then this is what Alex wanted to do as well, to tell a story about this. But I would be very surprised if the whole thing was actually used, sort of titled as interabled relationships. It's just that's required to leave without defined people.
Yeah, I think if it was going to have been called interabled relationships, it probably won't be now, because I'm thinking about like BBC Three and some of the titles that they do tend to give to their programs. But again, it's one of those things, like my opinion on the word may change with further research or education on it, but as it stands, I can't firmly say one way or the other. I do understand why people reacted the way they did. But at the same time, it is a word that some disabled couples are using and that they feel is empowering them to discuss their relationships and to challenge certain stereotypes about the relationship. So, regardless of discussion on the word, and I think the discussion on the word will be an important part now of the program because of that tweet, and perhaps that will help educate and further lead to more discussions around relationships between disabled and non-disabled people. But my hope is that the program does go ahead, because we do need more representation and we need more education. Because the thing is, like I know that when I'm out, and especially if I'm out in my wheelchair or just out and about generally, there are assumptions that as a disabled person, I don't have relationships, that maybe and I'm sure some people, and especially some of our listeners, will have had it. They'll have had quite invasive questions about their love life and whether or not that's
Quite detailed
possible.
question. Yeah, I do
Yes.
discuss it, like I'm single, like, but I do get a lot of impersonal questions about, how does it work, and well, how do I do it? And I'm just like, me no business.
Yeah, it's none of their business, but I think, we need to have more discussions that normalize the fact that people are in relationships. Or I think the worst one I've had is kind of, you're so good for being in a relationship with someone like them. And it's kind of like, what do you mean they're so good? Maybe I'm the badass of this relationship. You have no idea. You're making assumptions here. Maybe I wear the trousers. I am brilliant. But the
Well,
assumption is that they're an
I
angel.
have witnessed a conversation online, via Zoom and Facebook between you and your partner, and I can definitely say, Felicity, you wear the trousers.
Thank you. But it is kind of the assumption that someone has to have been an angel or they're sacrificing something to be in a relationship with someone who's disabled, and it's really, really negative. And so hopefully, if it's done right, and I believe it will be done right because it's being done with the best intentions, although sometimes the best intentions don't always lead to the right result. I mean, we see that with Barcroft TV, where they do give disabled people a voice, but sometimes the production and the editing is quite ableist.
Well, no, but I would be quite confident when it comes to this program that Alex doing, because it has been pitched by him, and it's going to be sort of edited and run by him. So I think he would be very careful regarding what Messick was out, and for want of a better expression, it's his baby, so he'll want to get it right. Especially now after the commentary regarding the hashtag enjoyable relationship. But I think, like, even looking at that, some of the comments that they were getting about ignore the program when it comes on, walk away from it, or sort of telling Alex to pull it. I think those were the sort of wrong conversations they were having with Alex. They should have actually encouraged them, but say, like, ask them more about what the narration of the program will be, what the content will be, how your disabled relationships and under-disabled relationships going to be portrayed. This could have been a conversation that could have led to getting the program done right by having all the different types of voices, and even include what's in the program, which you readily see yourself. Plus, the highlight that maybe this term isn't the right term to be used. Now, I'm not going to say one way or another it was right or wrong, because people have their own opinion, but as you say, it opens up the conversation and brings it to the next level. Because we had this conversation ourselves, I think about, what month is this now, October? I think at the beginning of the year, so maybe March, as you said earlier today, I always used the term person with disability, whereas now I use disabled person or disabled people. And that's just to having the dialogue with you, and it wasn't as though you tell me this is the way it is. This is, you sort of educated me in the sense, so this is why I would use it, this is why some people use it. But then you still flipped it on the other side that, granted, this is why other people use the term PWD. But I felt that, listening to you and listening to both sort of sides of the argument that the disabled person actually fitted my model in a way that I view myself better. So I think this is the talk, the conversation that needs to be done, not just on Twitter, but on the television program as well.
Yeah, and I think cancelling the programme outright would be a shame, because it's disability-led, it's going to be discussing disability, it's important to have the representation, and granted, there might be teething issues, such as what's happened with this tweet and the discussion around it, but that doesn't mean it should be cancelled. It means that that's a space to have a discussion so that we can ensure that a programme comes out that is suitably representing the wants and needs and reflective of the actual disabled community, and is something that we can all be proud of, because there is too little disabled representation as it is. And so firing it down could be inappropriate. So, like, granted, there was that movie that had all non-disabled actors playing disabled characters that was winning awards earlier this year. That's really bad representation. That's very problematic. I understand the discussion about why that probably should never have happened. But in regards to this, it's a disability-led production. It's going to have disabled voices on it from actually disabled people, not non-disabled people pretending to be disabled. And so at the end of the day, I think there's the best intentions behind it, and that's something that we as a disabled community can help shape and mold into something that is great and suitable to reflect us, basically. Because there is so much negative representation out there, or misinformed representation, and I believe Alex is very open to hearing from the rest of the community on this.
Well, I think that really kind of sums up everything that we have to say now regarding the enviable relationships, and I think we covered quite a lot of ground there. But like, we sort of covered, like, sort of why people might have the negative issues, but then why there's a positive, and how it actually stemmed, well, maybe not stemmed from, but how it basically got legged through Dr. Philip, or Dr. Mm-hmm. Phil, I keep calling Philip there, but through Dr. Phil. But this is a discussion that we can continue online. So if you want to tweet myself or Felicity or any other people, maybe Alex as well, that we can carry this conversation forward. And, while in fight with each other, we'll educate each other.
Yeah, there's no right or wrong answers here, because obviously there's going to be different perspectives on the words. And we would love to hear everybody's opinion and perspective. And maybe we'll end up educating each other in ways that we hadn't intended.
So now we will take a little hot chocolate break, and we will meet you after the break, where we're going to be talking about our favourite time of the year, Halloween, and maybe some of the issues regarding the costumes that non-disabled people might wear. So we will see you after this short little break. Welcome back. Now we're going to be talking about Halloween, some costumes that we might be dressing up as to celebrate this spooky time of the year. Particularly those maybe who are non-disabled who might decide that they may want to dress up with different forms of disability. Now, some of you might be saying that we have discussed maybe this along the lines when it comes to cosplay in one of the earlier episodes, but we do feel that there is a slight distinction between the two. But I'll let Felicity explain that wee bit for sure, okay?
So basically, when we were previously talking about cosplay, we would have talked about like Charles Xavier and people maybe dressing up as that character from X-Men and then using a wheelchair. The difference of what we're discussing today is that at Halloween, people aren't dressing up as a character who happens to be disabled. They're dressing up as actual illnesses. So you'll see people dressing up as specific mental illnesses. And one of the most notable examples of this, and because we are going to be discussing different mental illnesses and different issues to do with stigma and costumes and things like that, I am going to place some trigger warnings right now. So this is your heads up. But one of the costumes that had caught my eye and had caught my eye due to my own personal lived experience of eating disorders was a costume called anorexia, which is basically just a black dress with a skeleton on it. And the thing that's really upsetting about this is you can go as a skeleton for Halloween. That's a fairly normal costume to go as. But when you go as a skeleton for Halloween with the specific association or linking it to a mental illness, you're dressing up as that mental illness. And the problem with this costume is there's multiple layers to the problem with this costume, but anorexia is one of... It's a mental illness that has the highest mortality rate of any mental illness, and it can affect people regardless of what they weigh. So the assumption that certain people have to weigh a certain thing to be ill is wrong, because sick is sick enough. But this is a sort of costume that perpetuates ideas about a mental illness that are harmful, that can prevent people from talking to friends and family, and can prevent people from accessing early intervention. But the thing is, when we think about costumes at Halloween, they generally fall into like three categories. So you've got scary, sexy, and funny. And like, I'm not going to lie, I can be sexy when I want to be. I can also be quite scary if I want to be, and I can be very funny. But my mental illness isn't any of those.
I can be scary and I can be very funny, but meatloaf says 283 is not bad.
Well, my mental illness isn't scary, it isn't funny, and it isn't sexy. And when you dress up as a mental illness and present it in this way, it's really harmful, because you're seeing people dressing up as mental illnesses alongside someone dressed as a brain-eating zombie and a bloodthirsty vampire. And it does perpetuate the idea that we are scary monsters when we're not. And it also perpetuates sometimes the idea that we could be violent or threatening, when actually people with a mental health condition are more likely to be the victims of violence than to actually perpetuate that violence themselves. And this is why it's really harmful, because they get to go home and they can take off whatever costume they're wearing, but I don't get to take off the mental illness when I go home. It's not like a mask that I just remove and suddenly it's gone. And it's so harmful for these depictions and representations in the media, especially those that make it seem like mental illness is scary or is dangerous, because when someone starts to experience mental ill health, and one in four people will experience mental ill health, if you thought that your experience of mental illness was similar to what you see at Halloween, so one of these scary costumes, and you thought people are going to think that you're scary or dangerous, how likely would you be to go to the GP to access services? It's difficult enough without thinking that, you know, someone's going to lock you up because you are scary and dangerous, when you're not. That's the thing, you're not.
See, that was even, you see this sort of imagery at Halloween, or even in, like, it's not just Halloween, but it's like scary movies or maybe scary episodes of a television program, you know, to see mental images like this, where they think they portray disabled people, people with mental health issues, as dangerous or something that is scary. But it makes then people like yourself or like myself that maybe would have certain sort of mental health issues, particularly yourself, it would give off the impression that we might feel that there's something wrong with us, but it's not, because when we see other people portraying it like that, it's like they're saying that there's something wrong. And that sort of feeds into our internal monologue that there's something not right about us, which is not, it's not true. Like, we might have some sort of things like mental health is, something you have to deal with, but it's not, it doesn't make anything about you being wrong.
Yeah, and I think one of the other issues is like when you do look up costumes, especially if you look up costumes that are associated with mental illness, you'll see stuff like has escaped from the psychiatric ward, or a lot of abbreviated terms around mental illness, which would be very ableist. And there are terms that sometimes people use in everyday language to describe something that's maybe a bit out there or wild. And I don't really feel comfortable using them here when we're discussing this. Although that's not to say that occasionally stuff like I think none of us are completely inherently free of having internalized ableism or sometimes saying something that maybe isn't great because we do live in an ableist society. But when people see these costumes, especially costumes that are presented as someone maybe having escaped from a psychiatric ward, it presents a certain image or idea of what it's like to be on a psychiatric ward. So you'll see stuff like straitjackets, or you'll see someone maybe foaming from the mouth. And like, I have been on a psychiatric ward, and I can tell you it was nothing like that. I spent a lot of time looking at four blank walls, getting really quite bland food that they had defrosted and heated up that had been sitting in a freezer for months, and just generally watching a bit of television. It wasn't as dramatic or as scary as people present it as. And it also then means that,
When you get that image there, that might mean that when somebody maybe feels like they need to come forward and talk to somebody, that when they see this scary version of what mental health is or what a psychiatric ward is, it might just prevent them from taking that step, because they might feel that they would be thrown in there and secluded from society and be seen as scary.
And it might also prevent someone from actually talking about their own lived experience of having been in a psychiatric ward, because they're worried that people are going to then associate them with the images that we see around Halloween. And Halloween should really just be a fun time of year. It shouldn't be a time when we just have sort of open season on openly showing stigma and discrimination and prejudice as if this is some sort of normal part of Halloween. It really, really isn't. And it's really, really problematic when we look at society as a whole, because people with mental health conditions are still facing issues with accessing work, or just basically being able to live their everyday lives. So, for example, the Mental Health Foundation has some statistics. So, over a third of the public think that people with a mental health condition are likely to be violent. And this isn't true. People with severe mental illness are more likely to be the victims of crime than to be the perpetrators. People with mental ill health are more likely to be dangerous to themselves than to others. And the thing is, we also live, we have reduced income, we have lower educational attainment, we have reduced quality of life and a much shorter lifespan as a result of mental illness. And also because we live in a society that doesn't really understand it and makes it more difficult for people to get jobs. I saw a study recently where about 50% of employers said they'd be uncomfortable hiring someone who was autistic. And this
50%.
is 50%. And like the thing is, this is the norm. And that's not okay. And we see, and again, like autism, you'll see people dressing up as if they're autistic with weird stereotypes at Halloween.
Sort
You'll see it. You'll see it on TikTok as well.
like the whole stereotype of the Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman, like,
Yeah.
which people automatically think that's what it is, and you know yourself, it's not.
Yeah. But like when I think about how people have dressed up as if it's a costume, especially on TikTok, I think back to, and we had discussions about this at the time, three is the magic number, which was a, it was a trend that was going around on TikTok where people were pretending to be people with learning disabilities or people who are autistic, which they're basically pretending to be me, but in a derogatory and a really derogatory manner. And that was dressing up as a costume. And again, you'll see this at Halloween. I've seen in the past people dressing up as cancer patients and other things, and it's not funny. And I don't understand why people think that is funny. And it also just perpetuates just such harmful ideas about these illnesses. When these people and like us as a community, we're already facing so much difficulties when it comes to being like marginalized, when it comes to like barriers in society, when it comes to assumptions and prejudice, without people continuing to mock it. And like there could be an argument made that people are punching down and presenting disability and other things like this in this way because they're scared of it, because we live in an ableist society that presents being disabled as a tragedy or something to be feared. And like you and I are living proof, it's not, we're living our best lives. But like even if that is the argument that's presented, I don't think that's a strong enough argument to excuse these behaviors.
Well, no, like, I mean, unfortunately, it seems to be like a lot of stuff that we talk about week to week seems to overlap some of the things that we've talked about in the past regarding cosplay and ableism and things like that there. But it just shows you, like, just by doing one thing, it sort of fits into everything else. And it's just something like, I mean, we do make up one in five of the population. And not only does it pop up about the Purple Pound, which we talk about every week as well. But it's like we do make up one fifth of the population, yet we seem to be easily stigmatized, easily scared of, and easily allowed to get away with it.
Yeah, and I
So
think, you know,
you wouldn't be
Halloween
allowed to get
is.
away with maybe quite as easy as maybe another section of society.
Well, potentially, but I think the thing is, when we look at Halloween, we have to have reminders every year about what costumes are not okay and what costumes are not acceptable, or which are harmful or perpetuating harmful stigma. So you'll see people doing blackface and other similar things, or dressing up in ways that are culture appropriating different people's cultures. And so this isn't just an issue to do with like mental illness and costumes. I think it's an issue that's much further afield. But sometimes I feel like some of the conversations have made more traction in that there's more open discussion about why that's not okay. It doesn't mean that people aren't doing it and that that problem is solved. And I think it's going to be an issue that we all have to work with together in an intersectional way so that we're all bringing forward the reasons why this is harmful. But sometimes when it comes down to like mental illness and costumes, it feels like a conversation that we need to have more of. And which doesn't always, it gets mentioned maybe once a year, specifically at Halloween, and never again. And I think as a whole, anybody who is feeling that their culture or their identity is being used as a costume in a way that is really harmful, we all need to come together more and have discussions about how we can work together to enable us as a group to challenge these, because you know it is nothing about us without us, but also you know we can't do it alone, and there are intersecting identities that we need to be aware of and to work with. And I think together we're more powerful in being able to address this and to challenge this. And you know it's just, this is your yearly reminder that blackface is not a costume. Mental illness is not a costume. Disability generally, not a costume. Cultural appropriation, not a costume. You know, you can go as a witch. You could possibly go as a vampire. Although when I say witch, I am very conscious that there are Wiccans out there. But I mean, there's lots of opportunities to have fun and silly costumes at Halloween. You could go as a Crayola crayon. You do not need to go dressed as a mental illness. You know, there's no excuse.
Again, maybe that's something that we could work along. So maybe next Halloween, we get on. Maybe we'll do up a few posts and stuff to sort of to show examples of more positivity when it comes to what you can dress up as. Something that's a bit of more positive message, rather than something that would have negative connotations or something that would impact negatively on a certain member of certain section of society whether it's mental health disability or cultural appropriation and things like that, because there is a lot of scope for imagination, a lot of color, a lot of fun, and even education when it comes to Halloween. So maybe it's just something we could work on for 2021, and hopefully by then we can all get out and enjoy ourselves for Halloween as well. And maybe we could organize somewhere, maybe in Belfast and Swansea and different places, a big get-together photo shoot of all the different types of costumes that we could do, rather than what we shouldn't do.
Yeah, I mean, I went as Oogie Boogie last Halloween, which was amazing. And this Halloween, I went with a bed sheet over my head in a Zoom call as a ghost. So not as fancy, not as dramatic. And later today, I'm taking the toilet roll, and I'm going to I've no idea. I'm going to make something sort of creative with it as part of a costume. It could turn into wings for all I know, but I have no witch's hat,
This
so
Halloween, I'll
we'll
not be
see.
dressing. This Halloween, I'll not be dressing up, but I will be having a big bowl of my mother's pretty pudding. I don't know if you're familiar with that up in your neck of the woods. Maybe it's just a Tyrone thing. Have you ever had that?
It might just be a Tyrone thing. Although that being said, I may have tasted it because we're not that far apart, like Armagh and Tyrone. It is a bit of a stone's throw.
Well, we've got the black water between us.
Although I am missing a lot of the food from home because I had a friend drop off butter, and for some reason it seems to be that, and I will admit this is a I am generalizing here, but since I've come over here, buttermilk is not very common. You can't just get it in a shop. It's usually one of the bigger shops. And for some reason, people seem to prefer unsalted butter. And
Okay,
that is a
right.
horror story in and of itself.
There's something very wrong over there in Wales, right? You need to have a discussion with them. But I think that's really what we've covered today regarding Halloween. We had a bit of fun there at the end. But it was a serious topic and something that people need to take on board for this Halloween and Halloween going forward. But not just for Halloween, but when you're having parties and getting together and you decide to have a dress up, you think twice before you put on the costume. It's just the right thing to do. So we will take a little break now and we will get back to just chatting about what's going on in our lives this week before we draw up for another day, another week, and another month. So we will see you after this second cup of hot chocolate. Hello and welcome back. Now we're going to spend a little time about talking about what is going on in our lives this week. So I'll just go with Felicity. I know you've been doing a little bit of selling on regarding D&D dices and a few other items. So I think this would be a good opportunity to pump some of your projects on the podcast because we're 8 episodes in and you've never mentioned it once. So Felicity, now's your time.
Well, I've started a small store on Etsy. It's called Craftical Hit, so craft instead of critical hit. So if you do a critical hit or a critical roll, that's a really good thing in Dungeons and Dragons or in any sort of role-playing game. And so I sell dice and other sort of role-play game related items. So I'm planning to expand to printing miniatures and doing all sorts of things. But the dice that I have are quite fabulous, and I have coming up to Christmas dice which have little oranges in them. So instead of putting a Satsuma into a stocking, you can put dice for the dice lover in your life. And I have Halloween dice as well for all your spooky needs. I have no face, so the scream mask, but basically in dice. And I also have Santa Claus in the dice, which I think are adorable.
Well, you had showed me the Santa Claus one last night, I think it was, and I got to say, I don't play D&D, but I'm very tempted to get them because they are absolutely lovely.
Yeah, like I think that's one of the things. I started with one set of dice, and when you start, you tend to end up with more. You become what is called a dice goblin, and it's very, very easily done. But I'm going to be adding some wooden items as well. So there will be dice boxes and Christmas parcels. So you can do like a Christmas tree bauble with dice and a badge in it. So it's expanding. It's been good because it means then that there's a little bit of money that comes in every so often. Which can, help me towards groceries and stuff. So the way I'm looking at it is it's kind of an investment and a more long-term one. And it's also something I enjoy doing. So it's two birds with one stone. But what about yourself? I do believe that you recently had another one of your infusions.
Yes, well, I've been getting the weekly infusions there for the last months after the 8 month gap. But unfortunately, there was a bit of a gap last week. There was an issue with shipping, so I had to go a week without. So I got back on it yesterday again. And I've got to say, plus we've been sort of talking on and off for the last 2 weeks. And I'm sure you probably noticed, not just from us talking, but some of my tweets and posts, that I'm getting tired and can't sleep. So I've been really looking forward to getting infusion yesterday. I've got to say, normally I don't get to sleep till about 2 or 3 in the morning, but I was out for the count just after 12 last night, and I was slept solidly till about 10 this morning. So that slight indicated that I'm getting back to myself again after one infusion. And it's just been good so far. My health is getting a bit better again, but it also did sort of impact on sort of how I was feeling, like my well-being as well. Because you probably have noticed this when you obviously have noticed listening, but our listeners would probably have noticed, we went missing for 2 weeks. Well, the issue was that I was feeling a bit stressed with a lot of things, particularly around COVID and people sort of what's the word, negligence when it comes to understanding the importance and the dangers around it. That I actually commented, and it was quite a like a it wasn't like a cursory sort of blaming somebody for thinking that the way to do that this is a hoax or that whatever, but somebody had commented on a local newspaper Facebook account that that they were feeling okay and they should go out, and they're not gonna die from it. My comment just saying I'm glad you're healthy, but that's not really an indicator of how bad you'll get it. But let's just say, for argument's sake, that you're okay. You could still be carrying the virus, and you could pass it on to somebody. You could possibly pass it on to somebody else as well. So your grandma or your sister or somebody within your family or your friend network could become seriously ill with it, or somebody that they know could contract it from secondary coming from them, that could put them in ICU or could be potentially fatal to them. And that's what you need to be worrying about. It's not primarily, yes, you have to worry, you do have to worry about yourself, but primarily, you have to worry about spreading it on to other people. Maybe people that you love, but maybe people that you know that love somebody else. And he was saying, but he doesn't care about that. And I said, well, potentially, I'm in a high-risk category. And I said, potentially that could be fatal to me because I've ended up in ICU a couple of times before in the past, because people have said that it's just a bad flu. Well, a bad flu had put me in ICU in 2012, so that's how dangerous that was for me. So COVID, now maybe I could be lucky and COVID won't do me much harm if I did get it. But, it's not a risk that I'm willing to take because I am in that high-risk category where it could be fatal for me. And I said that, he could pass it on to somebody that I know, and that could end up me being 6 foot under. And his reply was, I'll not quote it word for word, because once he wrote it, I got very upset, and that put me in a 2 week spiral of ableism. But he had said that it didn't matter about me, he's healthy, and my death would be worse. I'm living a normal life. And that, to me, just cost me for 2 weeks, which way I just wasn't mentally available to talk on the podcast. And you probably might have, on Facebook, seen me getting angry and angrier over the last 2 weeks. It's just then that I decided, you know what, I'm taking 3 or 4 days to myself. I'm not going online, just to defuse and sort of learn the tricks that I had learned from my CBT therapist, Dr. Rachel McHugh, a few years ago. That sort of brought me back to where I feel like I'm more functional again.
Yeah, and I think, we've talked about it on the podcast before about how everyday ableism and these sort of attitudes existed before this pandemic, but this pandemic has kind of allowed people to be more obvious and more vocal in a way that not only disabled people, because we saw it and we saw it every day previously, but now that it's almost more acceptable in society for people to say these horrific things, but it's also being noticed by non-disabled people who, if you see it, you need to call it out. Do not just stand by and just think that, if you ignore it, it will go away. It won't. These sort of views and this devaluation of our lives needs to be challenged. And, what is just a comment to that person can really have quite a harmful impact on other people. And I know, like, you and I both, we've experienced similar sort of comments and things like that from people. And it's very harmful, and it's very painful to think that other people completely devalue your life, because you might be a stranger to me on the internet, but I value your life. And it's sad to think that you can't value mine back, and that you're doing it because of something inherent to me, a part of my identity that I can't change.
Well, like I say, I mean, like I got to the point where I kind of had on myself, like for, I'm doing an online course and we're working on the assignment. Like I couldn't do any work on it for 2 weeks. That's how bad things got. And even my own friends, family that had actually said to me, "Tell me the UK," because they had noticed it, like a total 180 in my behavior and how I feel, my emotions, that they saw there's something now. I always encourage people to speak up and tell people how you feel. But when you're in the middle of it is extremely hard to.
Yeah,
And
it can be
I
very difficult.
so it took me maybe 2 weeks to actually open up about it. But I opened up about it online rather than tell them, because I find it easier sort of to talk to strangers. But I will get to the point where I will talk to, probably even listen to this podcast now. But I would definitely encourage, because like I understand how hard it is to come forward and say that these things are bothering you, and I know how hard it is to talk and be open about it, but because I find it incredibly hard to say that, because you do feel like you can't.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, once I was sort of more vocal about it and actually told people what I'm feeling, what I went through and stuff like that, it was up over, it was a click of a finger. The weight lifted.
Yeah, and like I think obviously, like, people, the listeners, they don't see what's happening in our everyday lives, and this is just an insight into it, but it's a small thing that, like, we experience all the time, and we did experience before the pandemic, and we'll probably unfortunately continue to experience. But being
But I
able to
do
talk
feel
about it
like,
is so important.
but I do feel like you said earlier, like it just seems to have got a whole lot worse under the COVID virus, because people feel there's ability to do it now. And then particularly when you've got sort of different sort of world leaders across the world, whether it's like the upcoming elections, I hope it'll get the right result. And then you maybe have politicians and leaders more closer to home, so that would add validity to these sort of harmful and hurtful phrases. It's going to be hard to change that narrative again, because if things were on the up since I saw like society was changing after the 2012 Paralympics, like the narrative did change, and things with disability and being disabled actually felt like a, we felt equal for, but that only lasted for like 12 months, 18 months, and then we got a new government done, and Brexit happened, and now I'm not saying anybody voted for Brexit, voted for the wrong reasons and all that, so that's not what I'm saying, but it did change the mindset of an awful lot of people, and it just made people feel more selfish for their own needs and less empathetic to other people's needs.
And like, we have been away for about 2 weeks, and like, I had a period there in hospital as well, also getting an infusion, which was Monday-ish. Which was it? I've had to get bloods, and I get bloods all the time. And I don't know if you've ever had blood taken this way. I had blood taken from my finger.
Not from my finger, but well, I'll not tell you where I got my blood taken from, but let's just say I'm a man and it was very close to that.
Well, it's something that they do for children, or apparently people who are having chemo and whose veins are quite used. And it's basically the diabetic, when they do the wee pinprick of your finger, but
Yes.
they milk your finger into the vial. So, like, that's how ill I was that they couldn't get blood out of me, and they had to go via my fingers. And I couldn't lift the kettle to make cups of tea and stuff like this. So I was quite glad to get my infusion. So I think between the two of us, we've just had a rough couple of weeks.
See, that sort of leads back to some of the things we've covered in earlier podcast. People may see you in the park, the car to get out, and it might be your good day, and you'll be chastised for parking in a blue by spot, even though you have the blue by, and you are an ambulatory wheelchair user.
Yeah.
But yet they don't see that. But then this Monday and this week for you just shows you, you know, that, you know, it's not all good for you as well. Like, they saw you in a good day, but I know you when you're in a bad day too, and I know from my own experience too, just what the bad days are like. We might be some days uncomfortable showing society our bad days, because again, that has, we were an extra level of ableism that we might get reflected back on us. But it's important that we do let people see both sides of us, because, you know, it's not black and white.
Yeah, and like when I was in the hospital having my infusion, towards the end of the infusion, I had a Zoom call because I have an office hour as part of my, I'm the project coordinator for Wellbeing Champions. So I was having my office hour and a Zoom call while there was nurses doing blood pressure and checking my temperature of my ear. And I could see people in the Zoom call were sort of going, oh, are you all right? What's going on there? Because I was multitasking. I was busy planning schedules for volunteers while doing this. And so, you know, I think there is, for me, it's important that people are aware and see the lived reality of having a chronic illness and a disability. But also, I think we need to have more understanding that when you need time off, you can take the time off, because I sometimes don't feel like I have permission to say, no, I'm in the hospital. I need this time for me because I am not well, because there is an expectation that because it's the norm for you, that you just keep plodding along.
Yeah. Well, something that we all have to learn. Like, I've learned that lesson the hard way. Not I'm saying there's a learned lesson yet, because I still have quite a lot of learning to do that. But like yourself, I had a Zoom lesson, not a Zoom lesson, but a Zoom meeting with the local council yesterday. But I had learned on the 11th hour, no, I can't do this, you know, because I have to, on this occasion, put my health first, because not only was I getting the 5 hour infusion yesterday, but that was topped off with a load of pre-meds, so I was groggy as heck. So me, the high meeting with the local council talking about disability issues, looking like my pupil dilated with a needle stuck in my arm, probably wouldn't be a good look for them, and it definitely wouldn't have been good for my health.
Yeah, and I think, you know, was it self-care and things like that are especially important, and it's something that we tend to forget to do. But we've covered an awful lot today, and hopefully people will take away from it, one, the need for self-care, two, to not be a bystander if you see ableism happening, especially in an online comment section, to step in and to maybe take some of the emotional labor away from disabled people who are having to deal with this online hate, to maybe reflect on what your costume is for tonight. It might be, or for any Halloween, basically, but have a think. Is this costume the right costume to be wearing? And also, hopefully, to maybe just reflect on the language that you're using, because when we're looking at interabled as a term, but just to have a think about what language you use when it comes to disability. So those would be, for me, the takeaways, I think, from today's episode.
No, I can't say I could add any more to that. It's just, I think the most important thing that we see, like, people are doing all these things, but if you just take, sometimes all it takes is 10 seconds before you do something, it's just to sit back and go, is this the right thing to say, or is this the right thing to do? And that's all it takes. I would like to think out of the 10 times, maybe 9 people will just say, no, that's actually not the right thing to do. So we could get this down by 90%, that would be great to take away from this podcast. And as well as that, there, one thing, as I said earlier, when we were talking about our lives this week, it's just, you know, if you're in a position where things are getting on top of you, you find you're struggling a little bit, then it just pick up, talk to somebody. It doesn't have to be somebody in the house with you. It doesn't have to be somebody you pick up the phone. Just speak to somebody, even if it's just a friend on the internet. Like Felicity, I talk to you all the time. You're probably fed up with it, but I know you're not actually. But as I say, it's speak to somebody, because, you know, you don't have to give them a psychological profile. You don't have to tell them exactly, you know, your full medical history. And again, when somebody is sort of taking a call from you, you know, they don't have to give you wonderful advice that's going to save the world, save the situation. Sometimes it's all it does to take for you to listen for 5 minutes and say nothing. Just all you have to do is, for one part, speak up, and the other half, just sit and listen to them. Don't feel like you have to input, just let them talk. And that helps. So I think that's all we can really take away from this week. So what we'll do is, at the end of the podcast, you can see, we'll drop a little links of some of the things that you can find more information about what we've talked about this week. And also, we will drop a little link as well to Felicity's Etsy store. So please do have a wee look around and buy some of these wonderful gifts, not just for yourself, but for your friends and family. They'll will love them, because I've seen them and I feel like I want to buy everything. But I'll leave a few items for you all to buy too. So until next week, stay safe, keep well, and don't forget, wear a mask.